Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of the Lean Definition Process Discussion Series.
Yes, now we're doing this. Yes, this, we have a name.
We have a name, the Lean Definition Process. I'm Cindy F. Solomon, your host on the Global Product Management Talk channel on Blog Talk Radio. You can find me at startupproduct.com. And I'm here with Malcolm Knapp of
the Engineer Accelerator. We're a professional training program for hardware engineers looking to get into the industry. And you can find us at engineeraccelerator.com.
So we've been recording our informal discussions intentionally to be transparent as we think our way through how to communicate this process and how to transmit it specifically for product managers, but as well as product teams. And this is a 19th session. I think we've demonstrated the difficulty of working with language. We've had a couple of guests to get their feedback, and we've zeroed in on the name,
and we've talked about the sort of skill set or skill list that that you need to sort of go through this process.
And this process is indeed a process. It's also an orientation. It's an approach, and it totally syncs with the seven phases of the product management life cycle, that when you start with the vision for the product, someone has the idea, or you're trying to innovate on a existing market or idea, and then you plan, you test the idea, you try and do a lot of things before you actually commit to the build, because that's the most expensive man hours and resources is building it. So the lean definition process totally aligned with in actually adds a level of discipline to those processes.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the biggest things for me is that a lot of people will go through this sort of very initial phase and they have a vision, an idea about the experience they want people to have, the users or the customers to have when they use the product, but then they don't get a complete picture of what that means or the implications of what the sort of highlights mean. And so the lean definition process was all about giving people sort of a more formal structure to sort of build out this sort of description.
So having a more formal structure, having a very lightweight documentation using pseudocode, but also enabling the product managers to drive this process cross-functionally to bring everyone together onto literally the same page to identify not only what is known, but identify early on what is unknown, if possible, or at least what we don't know yet.
Yeah, I mean, again, once you go through and sort of start looking at each part individually and sort of formally, then the sort of gaps appear immediately. You sort of are forced to acknowledge that you don't know something there, and therefore, and then you may not be able to answer it at that moment, but just knowing you don't know it is really important. I mean, the thing that kills projects or the showstopper is that you learn 6 months into the build and then your entire architecture has to change. And so the more you can at least know that they're an issue, then you know you can start planning for that.
And it also, something we discussed last time that I thought was brilliant was that it enables teams to work to learn together as they use this process, they become more efficient in working together.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I have this sort of, one of my things at the Engineer Accelerator is to say that, engineers take all this time and effort to make sure that their communication schemes, with radio or, the internet have all this error correction and checking in them, but then they think about the communication between the team, and a lot of people will, when I say something, it's immediately understood perfectly, right? And so I think that one of the things about this is to sort of put some error checking into internal communication.
Excellent.
You know, and that actually, and being aware that when you speak and when you say, there's a noisy channel there, just as much as if you're talking to space or something like that. And to sort of realize that, and sort of this helps you work through that, work around that, those issues.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. That was great. Context setting introduction.
Yep. So what I wanted to do is that we've now gone through this. We've sort of talked about the curriculum in some way. But I also wanted to sort of talk about that once you're done with the lean definition, you can actually continue to extend it beyond just that and use it for other things. So this is about putting it in context, sort of in a sort of a little bit broader context. And the first part is to see how this process helps with project scoping. And one of the biggest problems you have is trying to estimate how long things take, a big project will take to get done. And so when I was dealing with this issue, one of the biggest issues is that you a lot of times when you're estimating stuff, there has to be sort of a factor in there about how much you're trying to do. And what you basically can do is you can take the lean definition and you can sort of basically add up, you know, every feature, everything the thing that the product does, and every behavior, every feature, which is what it is, and every behavior, which is what it does, and the interfaces, and you get sort of a number, and each feature has a certain set of tasks associated with it. So, in the hardware world, when you have a feature like a display, well, you have to source that part. You're going to have to, get that part in the schematic, lay it out, you're going to have to test, bring it up, you have to test it, and so forth. And so each one of those things, and each of those takes time. And so what you can basically do is say, for each feature, it'll take 10 hours. And then you have 10 features. Well, that's 100 hours right there, off the bat. So, but what you can then see is that if you, by putting this in and taking these sort of, it's slightly mechanical, and they are sort of, this is just an estimate, so it's not, you can use different mathematical transformations if you want, but the idea is you basically are not only taking into account all the things you have to do once, like design reviews and that sort of stuff like that, you're also taking into account all the things that, the sort of size of the project you have. And I think this is very, very important because every single thing, and making a symbol only takes like 20 minutes or 10 minutes even. But if you have to do 10 or 15, that could be a whole day, of your time, or a whole day of effort, 8 hours of effort, which could be like 3 days of calendar time just doing that for one engineer, there's sort of equivalents for software and so forth. But the idea is that then you go through all these calculations. I actually have this sort of OmniPlan spreadsheet that's got all these different line items in it, and all the ones that are affected. I call them sort of scale of tasks. They're affected by the sort of the amount of things you're trying to do. You have a number, like it's going to take half an hour per time or an hour per time. I mean, testing can take, 3 hours per feature.
And there's software products that, when you're defining features through a user story, it lets you track what are all the tasks involved to fulfill that user story and how many man hours and, can you outsource them?
Yeah, exactly. And so this is a sort of, but the key thing is that so what you end up with this process is not just sort of doing it by phase. You do it by, it's going to take this many hours of effort based on the number of features and behaviors we want to do. And that's I think that's very useful because when you get into a conversation about how much you're trying to do, there's always a budget and a schedule for that. And if you are backed up, if you can back up saying, because we're trying to do this many different things, we don't have the budget for it, we don't have the schedule for it. So either you increase the budget, you increase the schedule, or you decrease the amount of things you're trying to do. And this has happened to me a lot, is that, this process, before I would, you go into it and the project would grow by a third because you then would start filling out or really thinking about what you're doing, but you had estimated on the original amount. And so you start off behind schedule and over budget immediately. Whereas after this, going through this process, you do it, and then the project, their scope drops by a third, you know, because, and that's really powerful. And also usually narrows down what you're really trying to do.
And I think this would be really powerful for even founders, mm-hmm. non-technical founders of startups. This happens in product therapy all the time. Someone has a great idea, actually have the money to bootstrap it. They have domain knowledge because this is a business they've been in, and they developed this product because that it's something they needed that didn't exist. They have not a clue about what technology would be required or what kind of technical expertise or how much that piece is going to cost.
Yes, and that's one of the key things, actually, is that this sounds, you know, I'm an engineer, why am I doing this? And this is one of the biggest reasons, is this basically translates, goes back the other way. So you translate the vision into what you want to make, the implementation, but then you can translate that back into time and budget. And that though that's compelling to the business side. And so it means that an engineer can then translate what they need to do into that language and therefore be understood in that language.
And that's the other thing that when I work with freelance and contractors or people that are just starting their own independent consulting, they never know how to price, or they certainly don't know how to take the potential client through the process for them to see what's involved.
Yeah.
And they generally, you know, at the beginning, they shortchange themselves because they want the project. They're excited about the vision, and they want to prove that they can develop it. But they never recognize what's going to be involved, even for their own man hours.
And that's what I mean, is that, you know, this is about acknowledging the situation you're in and being really sort of, you know, and so this makes a really tight connection between what you want to make for real, not like hand wavy or like vision style, but for real, like here's the things we're doing with this many permutations, and like one of the classic things, we're going to have three different variations on this one product, you know.
Right.
And so it's not, you know, and so that just means that not only, and acknowledging, it's not just you have to add a little bit extra to make one variation. You have to add a lot extra, you know.
Right.
But it's also just going through all the steps about what you have to do, you know.
And it adds a discipline to avoid feature creep.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
yep.
That's in the product manager's domain,
of
telling the engineers no, no matter how fun that new feature would be, and salespeople, no matter how much that one big customer wants to pay for this, it's not worth it in the big picture.
Yeah, and that's the key thing, I think, is that what this allows you to do is, you go through this lean definition, you freeze it, and then if a new feature comes up, then you can actually go through and actually add in by feature, or functionality by functionality. You can see the impact that will have on budget and schedule directly. Because you do this translation, and you can say, well, fine, we can look in this, but we're not going to just divert the ship until we've done it, you know. And it's usually really quick, and you can go through this process. You can see what will have to be, thrown away if you can make that change, what has already been done. And so I think that the key thing is that not that features and stuff don't change, they do, but what you don't want is an uncontrolled process where features are adjusted. And with a product definition means that because you know what you were making originally, you know what happens when it changes. Whereas if you don't have that, then no one really knew, like people, all these things were being talked about in the air, and when you heard the founder wanted this feature in there, it's like, oh, that was the decision made. I guess we'll put it in there. Whereas actually, no, the engineers really didn't want that for these reasons. And so, but if you have this definition, this documentation, this sort of reflection about what you are making, then you can say, well, is it on the list? It's not on the list, that's feature creep, or that's a new feature we have to go through the process, you know.
But, and then it also enables the product manager to put it on the roadmap.
Yeah. And so they can record it and say, we won't do it in this version, we'll do it in the next one, or something like that.
Right.
And you can go through that process as well. But, there's this thing about what are we making? Well, the lean definition is sort of the contract in some way. about what you're making.
Right, we're signing off
And everybody's signing off of it. And that's also
and
means
we
that...
we all agree that this is...
That the founders or the CEOs or the managers are also binding themselves to that contract.
Brilliant.
You know, and so...
Because that's one of the frustrations also that product managers have is... nailing people to buying in and not letting the executives change their mind.
Yeah.
Although it also has to be fluid.
Yeah, no, well, it can be. And the thing is, you can change it quickly if you need to, but you don't want, again, you don't want that process to be uncontrolled. You don't want the founder, you know, at some point, you have to trust the process. I mean, that's what founders are supposed to do, right? Or managers, they put a process in place and they trust that the process is it works, you know. And at some point, you got to do that. And so if you're changing your mind left, right, and center, then it means you don't trust the process or the people, and therefore, you have a sort of broken system, you know. So if you trust the process for real, then at a certain point, you would say, this is what we're making, and we'll only make this product right now, and the rest we'll put to the future. And because things have to stay stable for a certain amount of time to actually make it, you know. And again, there's variation depending on if you're in software and hardware and stuff like that. But this is the key thing about the scoping sort of thing, is it gets this sort of feedback path back into dollars and time, which is really what business and business side understands. You know, so marketing may have this vision that's translated back into actual how you make it, but then you have to translate it back out again into this other domain. So then, and that closes the loop.
And also in the process of developing the lean definition, you're identifying materials specifically. The materials that are required.
Yeah, and you treat it as like, okay, we're making it today, right now, and so don't do something you wouldn't do in the actual product. You know?
But it also enables the discussions around the sourcing and the outsourcing of those materials.
Yeah, so it can, and so basically, you know, when you start thinking about this sort of stuff, it's sort of. You can get into those discussions. I mean, this is where we talked about, you know, the informational hierarchy, and there's no rule about what's the highest level, what's at the highest level. There's no rule about what is the single component you need could be, there's only one source of that, and you have to use that one. So therefore, it's at the highest level. Everything else has to be work with that component, you know. And that may be just that one project, and the next project, it's completely different. So there's no rule about what is the most important information or the highest in the hierarchy, but you want to know what those are. You want to identify what are those important things and what doesn't matter or can be pushed to a lower level, because those really important things are the showstoppers, are the things that kill the project, you know. So basically what you have then is you have a... this process where you basically can then incorporate the lean definition into the scope for the rest of the project. And this is what I do, actually, is I have a short phase that's, you know, fixed amount of money, it's going to take, you know, a couple of, it's an iterative process, and you sort of go around the iterations until you are in agreement. And then I take that and scope the rest of the project. And I really, and then I have numbers, you know, then if you're in discussion about how long things are going to take, like, that seems ridiculous. And you say, well, that's because here's the list of tasks we need to do for each one of those things. Do you agree with that list? And here's how each number of hours you estimate for each of those things. Do you agree with those estimates? Well, if you do with both those things, and you agree with, and you say, and you have, this is the number of times you have to do it, what lever do we have to change that, you know? And so it gives you, as a project manager, as opposed to a different product manager, it gives you the ability to not just sort of have a manager say, you must do it in 3 months by fiat and make it work, you know? It's like, well, we can, but that means we're going to be working extra hours, kind of people come in on the weekends. Do you accept the implications of this?
And the additional cost.
The additional cost, it'll be overtime or whatever else it is, or... You know, or whatever else is going to happen that way. You know, or the risk of things not working as well. Like, if you're going to go that fast, you accept that it doesn't work, and if we get to this point and we're not done, I mean, what do we do? You know, sort of thing. But then you really know, you have a much better idea about what you're in for, because you really know that the, I mean, even simple products have, you know, are very complex, actually.
And you also have a visual recognition of what the parameters are of the arguments of mm-hmm. the disagreements.
Yep. And so then you can say, well, if we cut out these set of features, then it changes the numbers, right? And we add that in and it changes the numbers.
Right.
And so you can then, it's not a sort
so
of abstract.
It's not a gut thing, yeah. And it's not based on experience of having done it before. It's based on the data.
Yeah. And
captured in the lean process.
Yeah, and so
lean,
yeah,
definition.
Yeah, so it removes the thing about you're not arguing by assertion. You're arguing by some stuff and from separated from
evidence.
And yeah, and so it's like, you know, here's the job we're giving ourselves, and the implications of that are, you know, X, you know, and so you. And I think that is, you know, gives you a lot more confidence to say we have an issue, than you just have a sort of, it doesn't feel right, you know, or like that seems like a lot to do in the time we have with the people we have, you know, that you actually now can say, well, here are the things, you agree with my assumptions. I mean, there are some assumptions there, but again, what you're looking for is not, there's no absolute, you know, truth in this, but you're just, because all you can do, that there is no way to get to that point. All you can do is you use, everybody gets the best, you know, they to the best of their knowledge at that moment, here's the situation you're in. And so with the best of the people's knowledge at that moment, here are the hours, the effort's going to take, and, you know, do we have that time or not? So this is just one of the things, is that it gives you this point, this sort of starting point to make these estimates from, as opposed to always having a shifting target. And allows you to communicate as an engineer what's hard and what's easy, right?
Right,
you know,
and it's
which
also...
which is always difficult.
It's a big picture of the full product, mm-hmm. because those projects would be made, mm-hmm. but there'd be different projects going on simultaneously. Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily sync. There was mm-hmm. no holistic appreciation of how it's all going to... how it all works together.
Yeah, and I think that this is one of the, this is just another way of looking at it. I mean, the agile process is all about, we're not going to look at the big picture, basically. Like, we're going to sort of look at the one thing we got to do, and that really is good for execution, I think.
Right, yes.
It's execution, and but it's also, you there is a big picture there, you know.
Right, but it's assumed, but agile doesn't speak to it.
Yeah.
And so I actually wanted to talk about this.
Yeah.
This does not replace Agile, mm-hmm. it does not take away, it actually makes Agile, which is a tactical delivery process, mm-hmm. it makes it work better. Mm-hmm. This is, the definition is outside of mm-hmm. the Agile continuous delivery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and I think that, I mean, one of the things it's, you know, so I think that they're focused on different things in some way.
Well, they're chopping it up.
Yeah, and so, but, you know, it is very, you know, the vision of the product is the holistic vision.
And the definition would occur before going to build, before the...
Yeah, and it's what you know at that moment. I mean,
right.
You know, like you said, things change, and you can always change the definition as you get new information. But you want to, you know, what I find is that if you don't start with something like that's well defined, well, that's the edges are defined, then you have this. You just have this big problem about people having different ideas about what the project actually is, and there's all these sort of assumptions going into that.
And I think we talked about that the lean definition provides the map.
Yeah, well, it's the, you know, in some ways you're viewing.
It's a visual map of the product.
Yeah. Well, it's basically the process is a discovery process. It's not about checking boxes. It's about revealing what you don't know, exploring the space, exploring the design space you set yourself. And what you then do is you're recording that exploration in the documentation. But the process itself is you don't you there's unknowns there, and miscommunication or confusion, or you know, things are unclear or opaque, or there's assumptions that have been sort of brought to the surface about what's going to happen, and so you're going through that process, you know? And so it's a discovery process or exploration process, and then one of the other parts of that is, of course, how long, you know, you set yourself this big list of things you need to do, you know, how long will that take to get done, you know, and there's a lot of methodology about this. There's a lot of, I mean, this will, you can basically take this idea of scaling your task list. You know, you can think about any you know, bit of functionality will have associated sort of tasks to it. That's pretty straightforward. I mean, I believe that's true for anything. You make your own set of task enumeration for that, and then you can use your own process for estimating how long those will take. You can use points or whatever else you want. But the idea is you incorporate in your estimate the size of the project you're doing, and not just, you know, well, it'll take 3 months because it's, you know, a big project or a small project or something. You have more granularity than that. So this is one of the very, very useful things that, you know, like I said, what you end up with projects is that their scope drops and gets simpler a lot of times, you know, rather than more complex.
Which is appropriate.
Yeah.
Certainly in a startup, mm-hmm. certainly to if it's a new product that you're introducing to the market.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also true that it's a focusing thing. It allows the sort of, you know, product side or the marketing side to really focus in on what they think is important, you know, because then they can say, well, it's not going to fit with budget, so let's look at again about, you know, well, push that set of functionality off to later. And then you end up with usually, you know, simpler products are more targeted and they usually work better because they're simpler. I have this thing that every product trends towards a general purpose computer because of feature creep. Because what a general purpose computer is, something that will do everything. but then you have a computer, and that's also an exceedingly complex device.
Well,
you know,
you're also describing Microsoft Word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's sort of, and so this is gets to the other thing about a lot of people will design for this product, but then they're also like hedging their bets for the things for the future. Like, let's add this in so when we expand the product, we can do that really easily. And it's like, well, then you're not designing this product; you're designing three products.
Right.
You know, and so what you end up is then you sort of have this mismatch of purpose.
And that,
you know,
is really what the justification for having a product manager, someone who's figuring that out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's like, what's this product, what's the next product? And, you know, so I think that, you know, you want the point of design, for me, is you know, when you're going through this sort of development process, is getting constrained as quick as possible. You want constraints, you want to have no options. And the goal is when you actually send something out and you're, you know, is that it's fixed. Everything, and that's when it's implemented. It's been fixed. And so you want to get to that point as quick as possible. And when you don't, when you are designing a couple different things simultaneously, you don't converge to one because you have these different, you know,
And I want to say something about
that affect each other.
When you have defined the parameters,
yeah.
Doesn't mean that now the engineers or the developers don't have options in how they build.
Mm.
It's still their prerogative in how they're going to code it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not defining how it should be built. We're defining what is being built.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's again, if you're thinking about, you know, what is the user experience, you know, that sort of stuff like that, you can get, you know, there is what is the product doing, and I think that, but the actual sort of low level sort of implementation of that is, you know, you can sort of leave that up to the engineers, unless
right.
it's super important, unless it's really high level, and then the engineers are saying, we have to do it this way, and then sort of, and so they're giving their input at that
moment. But we're not defining the tools that the engineers are using.
No.
From their own tool set.
Yeah.
Because the last thing that I want to do when I'm managing a teamwork product is take away the individual's satisfaction and figuring out how they're going to accomplish.
Well, it's also that one of the things that, we're doing here is that the engineers are in the room.
Right.
And they're doing the work of figuring this out in this process. You know, so they're, that satisfaction is there because they're part of the process. So it's not, I mean, you know, this is where the you know, you're figuring out how something really is going to be built, and that requires an engineer to be there to help with that part, you know, like. And that will bring up hard issues, you know, that have to be sort of resolved, you know. So, you know, you're not, this is about, you know, they're along with everybody, you know, figuring out what you will build. So I think that that's not quite the same thing as, you know, throwing a spec over the wall and saying, build this. It's like, here's the thing we're doing. What is the product that fulfills this need, you know, with you all in the room, you know, or with you all in the process? I mean, you know, like I said, you can sort of do this bilaterally. You don't have to have everybody in one big room and you all shout it out. But they're definitely in the middle of that, you know. So, and I think that's really, really important to emphasize. Yeah, so that's just one, that's sort of one of the sort of things you can do. You can basically use this both as extending this process, you know, sort of recap. What you do is you go through the process and then you say, you freeze it and you say, here's what we're building. And then, you know, as much as you can. And then you can use that both in two different ways. You can then use that to then scope the implementation part based on scaling the various tasks or the number of things you want to make. And then you also use that as a way to control feature creepers or feature changes. And so that when they appear, which they probably will, you can then say, well, okay, what are the implications of that? And you can actually, and you also then, they're not, you know, you give anybody who's trying to do that, they have to go through the process to do that. They have to agree to the process and go through it. And so, you know, but and then the you know, like we were saying, it's this agreement among all the parties that this is what we're building, and so therefore, you get buy-in, which is one of the biggest things you have to do as a product manager. So, there we are. That's one of the things.
Great. Cool.
So I think that you know, we'll get into a few more sort of other things later on, but that's one of the most useful parts of the lean definition is that allows you to do this part. So.
Excellent.
Cool. So always good. And so, you know, do you have any questions about this, or does this all make sort of sense?
No, it's gelling. It's gelling more.
Good. Okay. Well, then I think we'll wrap up for today then.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us for session 19 of Developing the Lean Definition Process. Mm-hmm. With Malcolm Knapp and myself, Cindy F. Solomon. Join us and hear the entire series, as well as the Innovator, the other podcasts on the Global Product Management Talk at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, or come on over to startupproduct.com under podcasts, and you'll get the series there as well.
Yep. And you can find all the information about the Engineer Accelerator at engineeraccelerator.com or on Facebook at Engineer Accelerator.
And we look forward to your feedback and your questions. And have a great week.